This is a WTOP original podcast.
From Podcast One.
Coming up in this episode of Target USA.
Perhaps one of the biggest stories of the last 50 years. Was an American president a Russian asset?
It was my agency, and it was specifically my department who started cultivating Donald Trump since about 1970.
You heard that right, and you heard it from Yuri Shvets. He's a former KGB agent who now lives in the United States, and he's talking.
Eventually, it led to close cooperation between the intelligence agency and Mr. Trump.
Shvets is featured in a new book by Craig Unger called American Compromat.
I think Americans are in the middle of an unseen war, an invisible war.
That war, according to Unger, is with Russia and the unseen assets that are part of what he calls American Compromat.
Coming up on this edition of Target USA.
The National Security Podcast.
From WTOP in Washington, D.C., this is Target USA. Russia
could render huge harm to this country.
North Korea's secret missile
capable of reaching the whole of the United States.
Dangerous terrorist.
D.C. is repeatedly mentioned as someplace they would like to seek an attack.
Cyber criminals.
Decryption successful.
America has a target on its back. And on this program, we investigate the threats, the people behind them, the agencies fighting them, and the impact on you. This is Target USA,
the National Security Podcast.
I'm J.J. Green. For years, at least five, there's been a question circulating quietly in the national security journalism circle. It involves former President Donald Trump and his connection to Russia. It's involved his behavior when he's been in the presence of Russian President Vladimir Putin. It's also involved whether or not he, Mr. Trump, had been recruited as a Russian spy. Well, that's been dismissed numerous times by the Trump team, and some experts say it's impossible. But on this episode, there's a new voice that can't be ignored. His name is Yuri Shvets, a former KGB agent, now a U.S. citizen, featured in a new book by Craig Unger called American Compromat. And he says Russian intelligence started cultivating Donald Trump almost 40 years ago.
It was my agency, and it was specifically my department who started cultivating Donald Trump since about 1970. And eventually it led to close cooperation between the intelligence agency and Mr. Trump. It reached the point when he became a valuable asset of the Russian intelligence. They used him primarily for like an agent of influence and as a tool, together with his organization, as a tool for massive money laundering, where the ultimate sender of the money or source of the money were a Russian intelligence service or individuals, Russian individuals, closely associated and connected to the Russian intelligence. What happened in 2016, the Russians, according to my estimates, in about late March or early April 2016, the Russians realized that besides the areas where they had used him in the past, they may also have their asset as a president of the United States. So they started massively helping him in this department, which was silly, according to the KGB Foreign Intelligence Service, because this massive assistance led to collapse of this information. It became known to the U.S. government, to U.S. mass media, and eventually the Russians got their asset as a president of the United States, but because of their failure, the failure of the Russian intelligence, he was put in the corner where for the next 4 years he had to do different things to prove that he is not a Russian asset. So ultimately, he was way less useful for the Russians than he could have been if the Russians did not expose the connection between him and Moscow.
Let me ask this question. How did he become an asset? What was the process, and when did it happen, and where?
It was a lengthy process. Overall, it took about 40 years. But it was a classic for the Russian, for Soviet Russian intelligence, because traditionally, the Russians, they have patience, and it's very important. One of their master recruitment operation is called prospective recruitment of prospective agents. The classic example is recruitment of several students in the 1930s in Britain, in Oxford University. They were just students, but later on they became important people at the top of the British intelligence and higher level diplomats serving in the United States and in London. And it was a coup in the history of the Soviet intelligence. So they were using these tactics massively. And this is what happened with Donald Trump. Originally, he came to their radar in about 1974-75. They had their agent from Russian immigrant community in the United States who established business relations with him and who was used to get more information, which enabled Russians to profile, to compose a profile on Donald Trump, to understand who he is as a person. And then they brought him to Moscow in 1987 for what they called deep evaluation and recruitment.
Also joining us on this podcast, and he too is a headliner like Mr. Schwetz, is Craig Unger, who actually wrote the book featuring Mr. Schwetz. He was able to pull all these details together and make it make sense. Mr. Unger, welcome. I'd like to ask you, if you would, tell us why you wrote this book.
I think Americans are I think we are in the middle of an unseen war, an invisible war, and Americans are used to wars where there are bombs, bullets, boots on the ground. That's not what's happening now. And Vladimir Putin has led the Russian Federation to launch a war that's sort of encouraging and inciting right-wing populace all over the world, not just in the United States. It's in Western Europe and in Great Britain as well with Brexit. And this is what brought us Donald Trump. And even though Donald Trump is gone now, the war continues. We see in a hard way that there are Russian troops in Donbass on the eastern edge of Ukraine. But even more in the United States, this continues. I mean, we have people like Mitch McConnell, the entire Republican Party, is under the sway of Vladimir Putin. In some ways, it's almost like the Party of Regions in Ukraine, which is a surrogate for Putin. So you see these, they're using weapons like corruption in many, many different ways. There's hacking, if you follow the SolarWinds.
Yes.
Hacking. We don't even know yet how deep and widespread that is, except it's very, very deep, and it can surface in the middle of a crisis. If you paid attention to the recent hacking of the water treatment.
Yes, down in Florida.
Florida. I mean, it's just insanely dangerous. The levels of lye in the water were suddenly jacked up by a factor of 100. And fortunately, someone was paying attention and saved a lot of lives. We see it in coal mines in Kentucky that are being helping Mitch McConnell and are being funded by Oleg Deripaska. We see it in the lobbying of the K Street lawyers in Washington. I mean, most famous, of course, is Paul Manafort and Roger Stone, but there are many, many others.
Okay.
And in that huge law firms where people are being paid $10 million a year to represent various oligarchs and Russian banks and
okay.
so forth.
So let's get back to the book, American Kompromat. You wrote this book along with Mr. Yuri Shvets, and Mr. Shvets, I want to get to you on several questions. We've already spoken about Donald Trump and his connection to the USSR. You said that he was brought to the USSR in the 80s for deep evaluation. And it's a couple of questions for you. Who arranged that? Do you know?
This is a question for me?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Yes, I do. It was arranged by the first department of the first chief directorate, which was running operations in the United States and Canada. And I worked in that department at that time. In the United States, it was running three stations, Washington, New York, and San Francisco. I worked in Washington station. But Donald Trump was run by the New York station. But again, it was the same department. Specifically involved in this operation was a lady who was the daughter of Yuri Dubinin. For some brief period of time in 86, he was the chief of the Soviet mission to the United Nations. And then since May of 86, he was the Soviet ambassador to the United States, operating out of the Soviet embassy on the 16th Street, close to the White House.
Uh-huh. So I was going to ask you how you knew all of this, but you just said it. You worked for this first department that arranged this. And the next question, I've read over time that there was some connection between Vladimir Putin and Donald Trump in the early stages of this relationship. Was that true?
It depends what you mean by the early stages. They knew each other, at least they heard about existence of each other in the years 2000, 2010. I heard Mr. Trump being an admirer of Mr. Putin for quite a while. I do not believe that Mr. Putin treated Mr. Trump seriously until he ran for the presidency in 2016. Because if you remember, at some point, Mr. Trump ran a beauty pageant in Moscow.
Yes.
And he badly wanted Mr. Putin to be present.
And I think Agalarov was involved in that operation.
Agalarov, yes, Agalarov. This is one, yet another asset of mm-hmm. the Kremlin and its agencies. So basically, Mr. Trump was surrounded by a horde of agents or assets of the Russian intelligence community. Mm-hmm. Anyway, but as far as Mr. Putin is concerned, had he known at the time that Mr. Trump several years later would become the president of the United States, he would run to meet Mr. Trump mm-hmm. during the pageant. But he disregarded this meeting and didn't show up.
Mr. Craig, you did a lot of research from the U.S. journalistic side of this and a number of other different sides. You mentioned something that's very important, the Blavatnik connection to a number of politicians, the dark money part of this. And earlier in this conversation, Mr. Schwetz mentioned, the way in which the Russian intelligence tried to use Mr. Trump to launder money. So have you been able to make a connection between all of that?
Well, I think one of the large things going on is we have not had a counterintelligence investigation. We desperately need one. The investigation done by Mueller, the Mueller report, was a criminal investigation. And what's really, really important to understand is good intelligence operations are designed to operate within the law. So when people say, oh, well, none of these people were indicted for spying or anything, that happens to be true. But if you look at each component of the way everyone was seduced by Russian intelligence, by first the Soviets and then Russian, each component is legal. So you mentioned Leonard Blavatnik, who is an enormously wealthy Russian oligarch. He happens to be a naturalized American citizen. So he's given millions and millions of dollars to the Republican Senatorial Campaign Committee, which Mitch McConnell oversees. And that happens to be perfectly legal. And you can see that again and again in the way Trump was wooed by the Russians, starting very, very early on when he sold, when Trump bought 200 TV sets from Semyon Kislyn. Kislyn, it turns out, as Yuri has explained, was essentially a spotter agent for the KGB who was seeking new assets to recruit. And if you follow the chain through, we just mentioned Agalarov. He was another Russian asset. Earlier on, there was Natalia Dubinina, who Yuri has mentioned also as a Russian asset. And we see all these people having relationships with Donald Trump, gradually reeling him in closer and closer until he runs for president and starts that in 2015 and 2016.
So as you look at what we're hearing and seeing in the United States, Mr. Schwetz, just as American citizens who are completely blind to all of this and essentially smothered by the political day-to-day fire hose of information coming from both the Democrats and the Republicans. And, you know, then, of course, obviously there's Russia involved in this and China behind the scenes trying to move the needle as well with their information. Back at this time in 2015, 2016, as we were going through the election process, there were people like Christopher Steele who had concerns about the credibility of this president. And there were discussions not long after the Steele dossier came out regarding Mr. Trump being involved in some kind of activity in a hotel in Russia, where there were supposedly tapes of some type of illicit activity taking place. First, do you have any understanding of what might have taken place there? And secondly, is it a normal thing for dignitaries to be filmed in that way or surveilled in that way?
Well, actually, response to this question may require a long one-hour-long lecture.
Well, maybe we'll follow up then.
Yes, yes. It's a yes and no. It's a widely popular illusion that any foreign dignitary must be filmed in Russia under compromising circumstances. It's not true. The modus operandi of the Russian Soviet intelligence has been charm offensive. Compromat has been always viewed as the worst basis for recruitment. It was the least reliable, and sooner or later, it would, more likely than not, it would lead to a failure or maybe even disaster. With Donald Trump in 1987, as I said, they used the charm offensive. They played on his special personality, which involved incredible vanity, low IQ, and overinflated or overinflated narcissism. And this combination of all these characteristics made him extremely vulnerable to traditional modus cultivation tactics of the Russian intelligence. I believe that the compromise, they do have compromise on him, but I believe that this is the money trail. I believe this is the true golden shower which poured to Trump organization during at least in the mid-90s, when money laundering became one of the top priorities of the Russian intelligence community. It was not the case in the past, before that. It was in the past, it was different. They had different strategies, but since about mid-90s and until present, as we speak, this is the same. Their top priority has been money laundering, and this is where he became most important. And they do have plenty of information. They have documents to show that the money, millions, hundreds of millions of dollars, which came through Trump organization, which originated in Russia, actually originated by the Russian intelligence community.
And that, I believe, is illegal, correct?
Well, it should be illegal because this is the money of a foreign intelligence, yeah. Hostile foreign, yes. Intelligence service, I would tell you. Besides, I don't remember when the law was passed, but there is a law requiring American corporations, before they start business relationship with any company or individual in the former Soviet Union, they need to do due diligence. Mm-hmm. I mean, it would require to do even superficial due diligence on the part of Trump organization, yeah. To realize that money coming from Russia to their accounts are not good money, are not clean.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Besides,
besides,
we should understand that a great deal of this money coming from the Russian intelligence was generated by the criminal organized crime group, Russian organized crime group, which, thanks to Russian intelligence, became global organized crime group. I will just mention the name of Semyon Mogilevich, for instance. Mm-hmm. This is a global criminal empire, which is integral part of the Russian intelligence. So money of the Russian intelligence, to a large extent, are criminal money.
Mr. Unger, Craig, you had something you wanted to add to this.
Yeah, I write about Mogilevich and the money laundering at great length in my book, House of Trump, House of Putin. And if you go back to 1984, you will see a man named David Bogdan come into Trump Tower. This is just a year after Trump Tower opened and Trump was finally becoming a national figure. And Bogdan puts $6 million in cash down and says he'll buy 5 condos. Now, Trump does not ask, where did you get the money? And he turns a blind eye to the fact that this may almost certainly came from the Russian mafia. And to prove that Trump knowingly, Trump's guilt in money laundering, you have to prove that he had knowledge. And Trump made a practice of turning a blind eye to this kind of thing. But it happened with at least 1,300 condos that he sold. So he was doing this on a regular basis. And later in the 2000s, when Trump had gone belly up once again after overexpanding into Atlantic City, the Russians came to his aid again with illicit money through a firm called Bayrock, which was a real estate development a group that developed high rises like the Soho Trump and so forth. And they gave Trump royalties from once they developed these companies. But they were getting money from Icelandic banks and various through financial vehicles that were well known to be laundering money for the Russian mafia.
That's Craig Unger, author of American Compromat, and Yuri Shvets, the subject of that book, a former KGB agent who now lives in the U.S. and he's talking. We'll be back with more of that story next episode.
I think an enormous amount of damage was done, and if Biden had not won the election, I think we would our entire democracy would be at risk forever.
To be continued. In the meantime, if you have any questions or comments about this program, send me an email at jgreen@wtop.com. That's the letter J, the color green, one word, at whiskeytangooscarpapa.com. That's jgreen@wtop.com. Also, we invite you to subscribe to our podcast and also to follow us on Twitter. We're at TUSA Podcast. That's at Tango Uniform Sierra Alpha Podcast. If you want more national security information, sign up for my newsletter. It's called Inside the SCIF. And you can sign up at WTOP.com/alerts.
I'm JJ Green, and this is Target USA,
the National Security Podcast.
7 years ago, college wrestler Damien Hurd disappeared from a party in Gunnison, Colorado.
Everyone had been drinking or whatever, the usual party scene.
When, how, and why he left are questions I need your help to understand.
Nobody's heard from him.
No, it's just like he disappeared.
From Cold Case Productions and Podcast One, Final Days on Earth, The Life and Death of Damien Hurd. I'm your host, Claire Sanima. Join me April 20th for the season premiere.
Now, stay tuned for the latest headlines from the Associated Press.